Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on Selection Monday. We've had a lot of content already over at jeanspage.com, made most of that free. So what we do, shortly after the announcement, we had our announcement article and a profile of all teams in the regional. If you want to go read up on them, you certainly can, for free. Also broke down what state's record was against the NCAA tournament field. We had those up within just minutes of the announcement. You can make of that what you will. But here we are to talk about our bracket, the whole bracket, kind of what our opinions are. We'll talk a little bit about kind of what is to come. You know, Mississippi State's going to have an official visit weekend this weekend. We'll talk more about that as we get later into the week. Probably firm that up on Wednesday. But, yeah, Mississippi State headed to an NCAA regional. Second time in 2 years. We're on the road. We want to host. However, we're happy to be there, but we're not just happy to be there. Going to a familiar place, obviously, Tallahassee, Florida, be our fifth trip there in the postseason. We've had some good success down there. As you guys are aware, one of the greatest home runs ever hit in Mississippi State baseball history was hit in that ballpark by one Elijah McNamee. Takes Drew Parrish's changeup off the scoreboard and left to eliminate the host Seminoles in an elimination game that kind of surprised some people. State and Florida State both get beat, and we knock them out. And then went on to Omaha. So some history there, we should say. And so we're going to spend a little time kind of breaking down the regional. We'll look at the full bracket, see how the SEC did. Of course, a new NCAA record. The Southeastern Conference with 13 teams in the regional. I thought going into the weekend it would be 12. Heard some things on Sunday that kind of led me to believe because of some other results that Kentucky may get in. They did. Yeah. So congratulations to our friend Nick Mangione and the Wildcats going to the regionals for the third consecutive year. He's done a great job up there in Lexington. He has. Last year, won a share of the SEC championship and went to Omaha for the first time. So congratulations to Nick. I texted him our congratulations on all of our behalf this morning. And it's good to see. I'm the kind of guy, I want to see all my friends win. Not at our expense, but I want to see everybody win. You know what I'm saying? Those are my feelings. I don't need everybody else to lose to make me feel good about winning. And so now it's one of those things, too. A lot of people are like, you know what, you're in football, I don't ever cheer for the SEC. In baseball, I kind of do, just because of the fact, like, the revenue doesn't really impact us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the NCAA pays for all this. It's not a big, you know, it's not a big moneymaker for us. But I like the branding of SEC baseball. So, yeah, we could have kind of a mini Hoover in Omaha when it's all said and done. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I ate at the grill today, but I love the Eat With Us group. They do such a great job of nourishing the Golden Triangle. And thankfully, they were open today because I was hungry, took the bride out for a Memorial Day lunch since every day is a work day for us, you know. Had a little time to be together and had a great meal, great service, and nearly went to Bulldog Burger Company, and I will probably get in there before I leave town to Tallahassee. You need to get in there as soon as you can, too. Whether you're on the way to town or in town, Bulldog Burger Company is the place for you. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Get that chocolate shake to drink on the way home. You can ride that ride home with a smile. But the reason you go are those great restaurant-quality hamburgers. Be sure and check them out today. Find your own favorites. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo. Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Be sure and let them know you heard about them on the Boneyard. You never know. They may do a trick or something for you. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, let's go ahead and jump into it. Of course, Mississippi State, the 3 seed, and if memory serves me correct, we are the first team to go 500 or better in SEC play and get a 3 seed. At the end of the day, it's the same game, right? It's 2 and 3, and you really, because they don't seed the tournament 1 through 64, it really doesn't matter that much. I know for some of our fans, you wanted to be a 2, but at the end of the day, it's about winning ball games. Mississippi State will open up with a game against the Huskies of Northeastern. Let's kind of take a look here. These guys have been absolutely red hot here as of late. We're going to do a more in-depth preview on Wednesday's show. I'll be traveling on Friday, so what we'll probably do is we'll probably do a Boneyard Friday night or Saturday morning. I'm leaning towards Saturday morning, but that's the thinking right now. But let's go back and kind of take a look here at the season it was for the Huskies, 48-9 overall. Now, you hear that, and you think, wow. Now, when you hear some of these teams they played, you're going to be, okay, well, I kind of get it. That understood, this is a very good team. It's a team that is very pitch-oriented, not a great offense, hadn't played a lot of big-time teams. But, yeah, they've beaten their contemporaries. So anybody overlooking these guys is probably maybe not showing them the respect they deserve. But that understood, I expect to go win this ballgame. The Huskies 23-1 at home this year, and then 20-7 in true road games, 5-1 on neutral fields. I don't know if you can necessarily it'll be technically a neutral field, but I suspect going to be a lot of Bulldog fans there too. So they opened up on the road at Charlotte, and they split a doubleheader with the 49ers. The rubber game of that series was canceled. They played the Boston Red Sox in an exhibition game, and they lost 15-2. Now, I don't know the parameters around that. It's one of these spring training type games. That's back February 21st. But nevertheless, interesting. Indiana State, they get them. They get a doubleheader on Saturday, and they get both of those, 7-0, 5-0, and then lose the rubber game 5-4. They head out to Honolulu, Hawaii for a four-game set against the Rainbows. Wouldn't it be great to be able to go out there and do that, you know? Well, they dropped 3 of 4. And Hawaii, of course, a team that kind of made some racket this year, and some people thought they may end up making the tournament. But they dropped the first game 11-5, win game 2, 7-1, lose 11-3, and then extra innings on Monday, they lose 3-2. So, again, 3 of their losses comes on a trip to Hawaii. You can kind of understand, to travel that far from Massachusetts all the way to Hawaii, probably a little bit jet-lagged, and then not to mention, to be in a tropical environment like that in March, after you've been around all of the the snow of the Northeast, I imagine it was a little bit of a culture shock and a weather shock for them, so we won't judge them too harshly for that. On the way back, they go play San Diego State. The Aztecs host them for a four-game series, and Northeastern gets all 4 of those games, 10-4, 9-6, 12-9 in extra innings, and then 8-5. Are you a big fan of San Diego State baseball? Do you keep up with the Aztecs? You know, because there have been some years they have been a team that people say, hey, they're kind of a solid mid-major. I'm not a big proponent of these mid-majors from out west, because the best talent in the west comes to the southeast. But the Aztecs finished the year 20-39. So not a great year by any stretch by the Aztecs. All right, they head up to Rhode Island next, and they get mercy ruled by Bryant. The Bulldogs of Bryant get Northeastern 13-3. You know, Bryant's another one of these mid-majors, too, in the Northeast that has some respect, you know, kind of around their league. Of course, you know, they're in one of these leagues, too, that's kind of a one-bid league, as you guys are well aware. And so They go to the America East Championship and then ultimately lose to Binghamton, who makes the field. So Bryant doesn't make the tournament, just one game away. They went to Orono, Maine, a place Mississippi State's played a regional before too. But they lose in the American East Championship game to Binghamton. So, you know, that's a quality midweek opponent, and they lose to them. You know, again, and it wasn't close, and against midweek pitching. Well, then they get Harvard and play them in Brookline, Massachusetts. They get all 3 of those, and then they get Merrimack. I mean, you kind of see what I'm saying here, honestly. Boston College, they travel to Boston College for a midweek game and get beat 6-0. Boston College did not make the tournament. You know, Boston College eliminated Notre Dame from the ACC tournament. in Boston College, made some racket for a while, but ultimately lost themselves. Towson State, Northeast gets 2 of 3 for them. They lose game one, 3-2 in a pitcher's duel in 11 innings. And then bounce back and Mercy rule them on Saturday and then win 6-2 on Sunday. UConn, a team a lot of people projected in the tournament, didn't work out that way. Northeast gets them 3-0. That's a quality midweek win against a very solid mid-major program. They travel to Stony Brook. They win those three games without any trouble at all. And that's the second series of league play. They get Boston College at home, and they get them 3-0. You know, again, so a pretty solid midweek win over a Power 4 opponent that finished, you know, near the bottom of the standings in the ACC, but that's still a quality win. They go to Campbell, and of course, Campbell is in transition down there. They take 2 of 3 from the Fighting Camels. They win 14-8, 8-1, and then get mercy ruled on Sunday by Campbell 18-8. So you see these losses, you know, some of these losses are not really competitive. Central Connecticut State, a team that made the tournament, they win that game 12-5. Central Connecticut State wins their conference tournament. Not many people expected them to do that. They had Long Island win it, but it was Central Connecticut State that wins it. Yeah. Northeast then takes 3 from Hofstra. You may remember Hofstra early in the year, you know, when people were like being so critical of our own non-conference schedule. And then the Hofstra pride pops up, you know, with some other schools. Maybe you're familiar with that. Maybe you've forgotten that. I don't know. You know, we'll see. But if I can get their website to work here. It's just amazing to me in all this time, in all this time of technology, that we have so much trouble sometimes having some uniformity with all of this. Nevertheless, we get to Hofstra, the pride of Long Island, they say. They opened the year at Tennessee and finished the year 18-36. Kansas State, that's a solid midweek series there. Played both games at home against Kansas State, and they take them both. Of course, Kansas State makes the tournament. And so, again, I'm pointing these things out to you because of the fact these guys have not just played, you know, the Louisiana School of you know, math and science. Hadn't been a great conference schedule, but they did go out and schedule some teams that were expected to make the tournament. They got some wins. They get Charleston in league play, take all three of those. They do not allow a run in that series. 4-0, 9-0, 10-0, mercy rule on the Sunday event. Monmouth. They get those three against those guys. Those games were not competitive. I guess the Sunday game was. They went 11 innings. They went 8-5. They get Harvard again in the baseball beanpot in Fenway Park and win 5-4. Delaware, you guys know those guys, right? The Blue Hens. They get all three of those games. They mercy rolled the Sunday game. They get UMass Lowell, who visited us a few years back here at Duty Noble Field, 9-3. They travel to William and Mary. It looks like Bill and Mary are the only two that played. Tight ball game on Friday, 1-0, but the other two outscored 30-6 in favor of Northeast. They go to UConn. We talked about them being a very solid mid-major and a team. You know, if UConn wins a couple of these games, they're probably in the tournament, but they lose 7-1. North Carolina A&T, three-game sweep of those guys too. They get into the CAA baseball championship in double elimination format, and they just sweep right on through. They get College of Charleston. They mercy rule UNC Wilmington, who has been a very solid mid-major in the Carolinas for a long time, and then get them in a championship game on Saturday, 9-6. No other game, you know, expected. You know, there's no other game required from that. And so they run through this thing again pretty handily when it's all said and done. And again, give them some credit. They are not one of these teams that is scared to play. I think that's important to understand. We're not going to be able to just show up and throw one of our freshmen and call it a day. You know, I guess maybe you could throw Charlie Foster, but I don't know if you want to do that. But a lot of pressure for a younger guy. But they're a team that likes to run the bases, for sure. But they run through their conference schedule 25-2 and end the year on a 27-game winning streak. You talked about how well Southern Miss was playing, and they were, and they swept right all the way through into the Sun Belt Tournament game, championship game, and lost to the Coastal. But Northeastern, that's your opponent. And looking at their league, again, it's a one big league. UNC Wilmington finished up 34-24 overall, but 19-8 in the league. So you win this by six games, and there's really not a lot to there's not a lot you can kind of analyze from that, because so many of those teams just don't play teams of our caliber. And then you know how it is in midweek games when you play so many of those games. You know, you're working in some other guys, right? I mean, you're trying to get some people to kind of have the opportunity to, you know, to get some work in. But the Coastal Athletic Conference, too, you know, let's go kind of – just so you guys know, looking at the RPI. And, again, so much of this, too, with them is them doing well in their league and then picking up some solid midweek wins against some pretty solid mid-major teams. You know, and again, I think Kansas State, that's probably a couple wins that you can kind of point to and say, you know what, this makes a lot of sense. You know, that a team like this would be a two seed rather than a three. And again, it only matters in the bracket itself. It doesn't matter when you get on the field. So Northeastern ended the year with a 22 RPI. And that's the thing you begin to think about. Even if they got upset in their conference tournament championship game, still may have made the tournament. And to be an at-large bid team from the Coastal Atlantic, that's an accomplishment. I mean, it truly is. It's happened a few times. Happened with Campbell. But UNC Wilmington, second, 76. And then Charleston, 97. Everybody else in the league had an RPI over 100. And outside of Campbell, everybody was pushing around 150 or more. Several of these teams finished with an RPI over 200. A couple over 250. And so, no, they have not played the best competition within their league, but they have gone out and done some interesting things with the non-conference schedule. And that's interesting. Let's kind of illustrate that point about Northeastern. And again, you win 48 games in Division I baseball. It's pretty good, right? Now, their strength of schedule is 168, but the non-conference RPI is 29. That's pretty strong. Non-conference SOS for a team from that league to be under 150 is pretty impressive. I mean, it truly is. Yeah, so we'll see how things go with those guys. We're looking forward to it. And again, more in-depth preview about them. It'll be a lot about the pitching side when we get together on Wednesday. Let's take a look at Florida State. You know, Florida State was a team, too. We expected them to be a host. And this, again, is kind of a reminder that it's not always about RPI. A lot of people get kind of caught up in that. It's not always about RPI. Because you look at this thing, Florida State is the 9 seed, but they have an RPI of 14. So you felt pretty confident they were going to host, but maybe not be in the 8-9 game. And, of course, we're paired up with that Oregon State bracket. More on that later. But, yeah, Florida State, 17-10 in the ACC. Let's kind of break down, take a look at them. 38-14 overall. 24-7 at home, and so that's where these games will be played there at Dick Howser Stadium. I don't know if you know a lot about Dick Howser Stadium. We're going to talk about that a little bit more as we finish up this segment. But, you know, they opened up with a three-game sweep of James Madison. They take down South Florida. They get Penn, a three-game sweep of Penn, as you'd expect. They get Jacksonville. They get the sweep of Georgetown. And, I mean, they're just off to a quick start, but they haven't really played anybody. They get North Florida. They get Bethune-Cookman, who we'll talk about here shortly. Kind of a dramatic entrance for them into the tournament. But it's a 9-7 game against Bethune-Cookman. You know, maybe Bethune-Cookman's not going to be scared of Florida State. You know, we'll see. Three-game sweep of Lipscomb. So, you know, they play Florida in a midweek, and the Gators get them 7-2. And then they get into ACC play. So let's just kind of back up just a little bit here. And so we'll take a look here just to kind of give us a nice break, you know, in the schedule. So after that Florida game, Florida State's 15-1. So they'd gone absolutely undefeated until they lose at home to Florida. That was a big game at the time. And then you get in there and you play Boston College. And again, Boston College, a team that finished towards the bottom of the ACC standings, they sweep them. They lose to Mercer in a midweek game. And that's when you start wondering a little bit about, you know, depth, you know, getting into, you know, the third and fourth game of a regional. If you get in a loser's bracket, do you have enough pitching to get out of it? I don't know. Early returns suggest that maybe Florida State doesn't. We'll see. They get 2 out of 3 against Miami, who made the tournament, and that's an interesting – you talk about the crazy brackets. The Southern Miss Regional is loaded. They get a rematch against Florida and Jacksonville. They take that game. They take 2 of 3 from Notre Dame, who didn't make the tournament. They beat Jacksonville. They lose 2 out of 3 to Wake Forest at home. And it's a weather-shortened type deal, I guess. Maybe it's not. They got Mercy ruled on Saturday. And then Mercy rolled on Sunday. So, again, we start talking about that pitching, right? They drop another midweek game to Florida. They get Virginia Tech, a team that was really interesting at times this year. But they sweep all 3 of those games. They get South Florida again, 19-0. The Virginia series ends up being canceled. And if you remember, that's when they had the shooting. And, man, you hate that. You know, I mean, you absolutely hate that. There's a lot more things more important than baseball. It's certainly one of them. They return to Mike Martin Field at Dick Houser Stadium to get Stetson. And then Louisville makes tournament this year. First time in a couple of years. Louisville takes 2 of 3 at home against Florida State. And one of those games is a mercy ruling. You start running through this, and you look at Florida State. I mean, how many times did they get mercy ruled this year? Maybe we'll go back and count. They play Clemson. They get 2 out of 3. They mercy rule the Tigers in game 3, 20-9. Then they mercy rule Jacksonville. They get Cal, which is always so weird that Cal is in the Atlantic Coast Conference when they sit on the Pacific Coast. But 2 out of 3 win for Florida State. North Carolina, they lose 2 out of 3 to those guys. And again, they get mercy ruled again. It's nuts, man. It is. Well, they may have been mercy ruled more than any NCAA host. They beat Duke in the first game of the ACC tournament and then lose to North Carolina and are eliminated. So they'll play Bethune-Cookman. The afternoon game on Friday, we are the night game. We will get up early and get on the road and be there for all of the festivities. Thankfully, we were able to get a hotel close to campus before they all sold out. But we're talking about these mercy rule games, and you'll have to forgive me. I did not put this in my notes, so we'll have to, you know, they start out, 15-1? Yeah, because they got through Florida there. All right, so let's run through here. We'll count them together. I mean, just for the interest of fun here, they nearly got mercy ruled by Notre Dame. They didn't. That didn't count. And you get a little deeper in this thing. They get mercy ruled twice by Wake Forest at home. You win 5-4, you get beat 12-0 and 17-2. That's not grand. Not good at all. All right, so that's 2. We'll skip through the Virginia series here. They get mercy ruled by Louisville. That's 3. I'm looking along here. Counting as we kind of go through this thing together. They get mercy ruled by North Carolina, which is 4. And a lot of these are in game 2s. And again, it just kind of makes me wonder about their pitching. So 4, they get mercy ruled 4 times this year. It's happened to us once. But it's just so interesting when you look at this and think, okay, what kind of team are we going to be facing if we get a chance to face them? Bethune-Cookman is your 4 seed, and I don't know if you guys kept up with it. Bethune-Cookman, in the 9th, down a run, hits a 3-run jack to win the SWAC tournament over FAMU. They win it 11-9 out at Rickwood Field. And I read some of the coverage from Rickwood. People talk about what a great venue it was, and it is. And maybe that's going to be the future home of the SWAC tournament, which would be great. But Bethune-Cookman, 37-21 this year, and 23-10 at home, and then a total of 14-11 away from their home ballpark. They opened up getting swept at the Jackie Robinson Ballpark in Daytona Beach by Stony Brook. They get mercy ruled, maybe it was just 9 innings. They get beat 10-0 by Florida International. They take 2 of 3 from UMass, and the one loss is in 10 innings. They lose to Indiana State. They have a 4-game set with Maryland Eastern Shore. They take all 4 of those games. Again, they lose that game to Florida State 9-7 in Tallahassee. Lose 2 out of 3 to Florida Gulf Coast down in Fort Myers. Lose to Jacksonville. And then they get in a swag play. They sweep Alcorn State in all these very lopsided games in favor of Bethune-Cookman. They lose to North Florida in a midweek and then take 2 of 3 from Jackson State in Jackson. And it's kind of a crazy one. They get beat 13-2 and then come back, win the middle game, and then get Jackson State 15-7 in the rubber game. Lose again to FIU, then take 2 of 3 at home against Southern University. And they put up some runs, man. They scored 34 runs in that series. And it's a game that they lose. I mean, it's a high-scoring scare. Southern scored 26. They lose to South Florida. They sweep through Mississippi Valley State without much trouble. They get beat by 10 at Miami. They sweep Alabama A&M. They win at North Florida. They take down the Osprey 14-3. They sweep Florida A&M. They lose to the Jacksonville Dolphins again. They get South Florida. What a big win for them in 10 innings, a 10-9 walk-off win. And then they lose 2 out of 3 to Arkansas Pine Bluff. Sweep Alabama State. They lose against Stetson, another team that was, you know, in their tournament championship game yesterday. And they lose that game 6-5 in 10 innings. They win 2 against Grambling. The third game was canceled. They win 2 of 3 against Texas Southern. And then they sweep right on through the SWAC tournament. They take down Texas Southern. They get Alabama State twice and then walk off Florida A&M to earn the automatic qualifier. So that's your regional field. And again, we will, as we begin to play these teams, we will break them down. We'll have full coverage over at Gene's page. We'll make most of that free for you guys. But yeah, it's an interesting regional. And of course, the most important game is the next game we play, Northeastern. And there's just so much about that team that's just kind of not known. The one thing you do know that just jumps out, these guys have almost won 50 games. This is a group that expects to win. This is a group that thinks that, hey, maybe we're different. We've won 27 games in a row. We have the nation's longest winning streak. So there's going to be a lot of belief in that team. But kind of quickly looking at them, hitting 290 as a group. But a handful of guys hitting above 300, but they haven't faced much pitching like they'll see with us. But one of the things that jumps off the page, 192 stolen bases in 236 attempts. You might be tempted to throw a left-hander against them to kind of control the running game. But, of course, you got to get on base, right? But one of the top pitching staffs in the country, and, again, it's difficult to really – you know, look at this and kind of compare it because of the fact that it hasn't always been against the best of competition, but a team ERA of 2.92. That is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And got a handful of guys here that have thrown a ton of innings for them and given up less than 3 runs a game. So, very interesting. Opponents hitting against them as a team, just 210. You know, so we're going to have to go out there and play well. The bats are going to have to be alive. Now, one of the things about Dick Houser that I don't know that a lot of people will, kind of comment on, but Dick Houser Stadium kind of has a short porch in right, but they have the elevated fence up there that kind of gives you the opportunity, I guess, and maybe they've done some renovations since we were there last time, but the fence is still there. And so, why that's important is because of the fact you have the shorter porch and you've got the elevated fence. It makes for some left-handed doubles. It makes a situation here where, because the way this thing is set up, it's basically straight-lined from the left field corner until past the power alley and left. And then you've got, you know, the center field area. It's just, you know, I don't know, what is it, 20, 30 feet? And then it's flatlined across. So it doesn't have the slope or the rounded edges. It's a very unique ballpark. It's pretty deep to center. And we'll get dimensions here shortly. But, yeah, with that extended fence, it's difficult to play those balls up the fence. And so you could have an opportunity for some doubles. They're pretty significant. And so our left-handed hitters may have a real chance to do some things that are interesting here. So it's 320 to right, and that's what it takes to carry out of there, 320, and 340 to left. You know, so it's kind of built for the left-handers. And so I share that with you because it's important to kind of understand It's a different configuration, but it is very much a left-handed hitter's park. And when you see it on television and you see how it kind of it flattens out, you know, from the turn in center field all the way to the right field line, the fence is basically straight. There's really no rounded edge to it at all. And so there is some room to operate, shall we say. Now, before we even hit the road, there is already a chance of rain in that area, and there typically is this time of year. But supposed to rain Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Of course, Friday's game day. So, you know, what could that mean for us? Could be a wet weekend, could be a long weekend, could be an interesting schedule weekend. Supposed to rain into Saturday morning. So my reservations are Friday to Saturday, but we can always stay another night. We get the money to do it. And so be prepared. Could be an offensive weekend for us. We're going to have to pitch it well. And again, we'll come back and get more in depth on Northeastern on the Wednesday show. All right, let's take our time now to talk about our player to watch as we our first look at the regional bracket. I'm going to go with Noah Sullivan. Now, they've got a couple of left-handers, and you said, but Steve, you just talked about the short right porch. You know, Noah Sullivan's a guy that's taking the ball the other way. I think this is a ballpark that is kind of built for his skill set and his point of contact and the fact that they've got two left-handed starters. I think that he will get some pitches to hit. And he is a guy that's not scared to take it the other way. So we're going to call Noah Sullivan our offensive player to watch this weekend in Tallahassee. Of course, that's brought to you by CloseWithBlair.com. Blair Chandler, a mortgage professional. A lot of people out there are mortgage loan originators. He's been in the industry 24 years. Get his expertise and know-how working for you. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, maybe you're looking to refinance, I don't know your needs, but I know you need to look no further. Don't overthink it. Just deal with Blair Chandler at CloseWithBlair.com, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Blair recently made the move to Priority One Mortgage, doing a great job there. The same level of expertise and service follows with him because it's unique to him, right? I like to keep business in the family whenever we can, so I encourage you to do the same. Blair Chandler doesn't discriminate, doesn't matter who you cheer for, but as a Bulldog, I think we should always take care of each other. Visit the website, closetheblair.com, for more details, or you can call and text Blair directly. Again, 601-500-2344. Okay, time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by Calido Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O, if I can get it out. Calido Guitars. I got it right the first time, Steve. That's another Mississippi State-owned and operated company. And I like, again, to keep business in the family. It's based out of Lake Jackson, Texas. Tremendous selection. You know, I'm just kind of a novice player. I just kind of play for the fun. And I got the guitar stand from them. It's great. You don't need your guitar just kind of leaning up against the wall. It's bad for the neck. You're only asking for trouble. And maybe you think, well, I don't play it. No, you need to respect the instrument, right? They do. Their expertise, know-how is unmatched. You can go by the showroom there in Lake Jackson, Texas. You can call them. You can order online, again, at ColitoGuitars.com. Whether you're looking for an electric guitar, an acoustic guitar, a classical guitar, anything you need, guitar cases, gig bags, strings, all the accessories you need to be a guitar player are available to you. And again, you could buy them elsewhere, but why not support a Mississippi State company? But also, too, they're going to continue to support Mississippi State. Yeah. So here's what we do. Promo code BSR. Use it no matter how you purchase because their quality and expertise will continue before, during, and after sale. But when you let them know you got a promo code, they know your family. Yeah. Promo code BSR. You know it. That gets you 10% off your purchase. No shipping. No sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. And then they're going to make a 5% donation of your purchase price to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. How could you get around that, right? Great guitar, name brand products at a discounted price, and Mississippi State benefits just from you buying a new rig? Absolutely. Be sure and check them out today, Calido Guitars. Okay. Could have gone a lot of different directions today, but I have some other things planned for Wednesday. And so we're going to go with the music of Tallahassee. Now, this is going to be a very eclectic list. We're going to have like some 70s folk stuff. We're going to have like some mumble rap stuff. There's a lot of stuff to it. but it's the music of Tallahassee. And you may be a little bit surprised at some of these artists that are from Tallahassee. Now, some of these folks were born in Tallahassee, born and raised. Others maybe went to Florida State. Maybe others were discovered in Tallahassee. So there are roots to Tallahassee with all these artists. So a guy that kind of had a bit of a following down there, still making music, Kenny Howes. That's H-A-W-E-S, Kenny Howes. We're going to go with Thought You Would Have Gone. So, I Thought You'd Never Go. Couldn't read my handwriting here. Thought You'd Never Go. He is very much a Beatles guy, and you can hear the influence in his music. Sounds like a guy that grew up listening to the Beatles. Turns out he did. But he's a guy, too, that has played with a few different people. He's kind of been kind of a radio, rock, pop-friendly type guy. And played some cover bands, just trying to pay the bills and stuff. But he is a guy that's kind of considered a bit of a local legend. All right, Lobo. When I first mentioned Lobo, when we did the songs about dogs, little did I know we'd be back. Lobo making his second appearance on the top 10 list. But here we are. It's Where Were You When I Was Falling in Love. And, you know, here's the thing. You have probably, if you're from my generation, you've heard this song. And you probably have completely forgotten about it. Then you put it on and it gets a chorus like, oh, I remember this. Yes, it was actually a pretty big hit for him. Number eight, Real Boston Rich A. Yeah, from Tallahassee. But they say it's kind of like the Detroit rap style. It's kind of that mumble stuff. I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to be critical of this guy, but this is his biggest hit, Help Me. But some of these guys, these mumble rappers, it's like they don't sing a rap on cue. I don't know what it is. And I guess it's one of these things where you just, you know, it's almost like the spoken word thing. Like you, the music is secondary to what you're saying. But there's a lot of effects, but it's an interesting track. All right, number seven. I've got this one a little bit lower than I ordinarily would. And my only excuse is Butch Trucks was the original drummer from Allman Brothers, and he was with him for 35 years. And he didn't write much music, and so in my mind I thought, well, I'll just kind of move this one back a little bit. But we're going to go with the Whipping Post. And sadly, Butch killed himself a few years ago. He said he had all kind of financial problems and a lot of depression issues. And God rest his soul. But we lost him back in 2017. Number six, I really dig this band, and they were kind of a collaboration between two competing bands, and then they found some success. I'm sure our friend Coy Welburn listens to the show regularly. He will appreciate this band. He may have already seen them, but it's May Day Parade, and it's a great song called Think of You. That's probably their biggest hit, but they're... I guess the catalog is kind of expansive. They do some rock stuff, and they do kind of like some punk stuff. They do a little bit of everything. But I think you'll enjoy them, May Day Parade. If you're looking for a new band to kind of check out, maybe that's the route to go. Maybe if you're not like me, maybe you're not a Sleep Token fan or Bad Omens. Maybe that's not your thing. You delicate little flower, you. With your little corn blower, corn blue. Is that right? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be so insulting. Cornflower blue. Polo on. This may be for you. Number five, Rita Coolidge. She graduated from Florida State and was a huge hit. And she's actually been a part of some pretty big tracks, but ended up being a solo artist herself. But It's Your Love Has Lifted Me Higher. And when years ago, there were a lot of people that did not believe that Christian artists should sing secular music. But there were some churches out there that kind of took Rita Coolidge's song and made kind of a hymn out of it. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But they did. They took a song that was romantic in nature and made it one that kind of fit their needs. No problem with that whatsoever. Many of you probably hadn't thought about Rita Coolidge in years. Number four, T-Pain from Tallahassee, Florida. Oh, yeah. Yep, he's... proud to be from Tallahassee, Florida. But we're going to go all the way back to the beginning. When T-Pain, like, everybody's like, this is interesting. He was doing all the auto-tune stuff. He just took it to another level. And some people are critical. The way I look at it, man, it's art. Do you know how many bands out there are synthesizing their vocals? I mean, come on, man. Come on. I appreciate the fact that T-Pain was honest about it. He's like, hey, if this is good, then some is better. This kind of gives me a unique sound. So we're going to go back to the beginning to I'm Sprung from T-Pain, your number four track today. kind of some legendary performers in our three. And you may disagree with the order, and that's okay. But number three is George Clinton from the Parliament Funkadelic. We're going with Atomic Dog. Why would we not? One of the godfathers from Tallahassee, Florida. And I love the fact that George Clinton was always uniquely himself. Like he had a look, but it wasn't a look, right? This is just who George was. And he was kind of eccentric in how he dressed and how he performed. And I think that's what made him a legend. Number two, Jim Morrison from The Doors is from Tallahassee, Florida. Maybe you didn't know. Yeah, The Doors obviously kind of got together there in the panhandle of Florida and kind of took over the world for a while. We're going to go with Love Her Madly from The Doors is your number two track. And number one, I think we had to do it, man. We had to. It's Creed. Yeah, that's right. Creed. Based out of Tallahassee, Florida. And they're going to be out and around this summer, as you guys are well aware. They were going to take Three Doors Down out with them, but unfortunately they had to back out of the tour so Brad could deal with his treatment. We wish him the best with that. But we're going to go back to the beginning with Creed, too. We're going to go with One. Love that track. That, to me, that's the track that showed that Mark Tremonti was not one of these just little average guitarists. You hear the first album, and everybody heard My Own Prison. You're like, oh, well, that's cool, you know. And then all of a sudden you hear One, and you're like, who is this guitar player? What's happening here? I think Mark Tremonti is probably the greatest guitar player of this generation. I've met Mark, super nice guy. You'd never know he's a rock star. He doesn't dress that way. He doesn't act that way. I love Mark Tremonti. I love all the solo stuff. I love everything he's done with Alter Bridge. And meeting him was kind of like a surreal experience. I mean, it really was. I don't get starstruck very often, but I was a little bit starstruck by him. But he is so endearing and engaging. You just feel like, oh, it's just another dude, you know. Super, super cool. So that's the music of Tallahassee, your today's top 10 list. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Again, I've got something lined up for Wednesday. And we do have a little bit of a backlog, and so we get into the summer. We'll try to get all that stuff caught up for you. I know some of you have waited a long time. Some of it's because I need to listen to the music. You know, it's tough for me sometimes when new albums come out from bands that I love. I'm not going to do a Freddie Fender list, right? I mean, I'm just not. I'm not going to go back and do that. But understand, I will get to yours eventually. But sometimes things pop up. We have to kind of get going. So we'll work on that this summer. But the best way to keep up with all of our top 10s is to follow Roy Simonti on X at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. Of course, I'm on all forms of social media, at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. You do too. And why? Because they have what we want. And that's new Mississippi State gear. You can never have enough. I got a closet full of it. I want even more. Don't you? My house is decorated with Mississippi State stuff and rock memorabilia, but I want more of that stuff too. You know, if some is good, more is better. When you're looking for more, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Visit them next time you come to town. Go by and see their smiling faces. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job outfitting that entire operation with the latest in Mississippi State wares, whether it be apparel or everything you need to detail out your fan cave, tailgating supplies, whatever you need, you can find at Campus Bookmart. If you can't make it to town and would like to support a Starkville business, and we're always in favor of that, visit them at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look at a bracket now. The Southeastern Conference sets a new record, 13 teams. We set the record last year with 11. We add Texas and Oklahoma to the conference. Both of them make the tournament. So then the number goes to 13. The ACC, 9. Now, what's interesting, too, we got 8 regional hosts for the SEC. And so then you begin to think about, well, that only leaves 8 spots where you can work in the other 5 teams. Well, they're able to get that done without anybody really having to get too far out of their neck of the woods. You know, they talked about there may be a couple of SEC teams that have to go west. Turns out really nobody did. Atlantic Coast gets 9 teams in the tournament. They're also got some hosting opportunities. And how about Georgia Tech winning the league and then not hosting? You know, a lot of people talked about the video of them being sent to Oxford, and they were kind of, you know, grisly You know, you win the league and then North Carolina and Clemson get to host and you don't. Rather interesting dynamic there, which says a little bit something about unbalanced schedules. The Big 12 does not get a host, but they do get eight teams in. I don't remember the last time the Big 12 didn't have a host. Now, of course, they typically have had Texas and Oklahoma to help them with that. But from there, it drops off pretty substantially. The Big 10 gets four teams in. We knew they would get three, and then Nebraska comes up and steals a bid by taking the conference tournament. They were a bubble team and then said, you know what, we'll take it from here. So Nebraska, Oregon, Southern California, and UCLA will represent the Big Ten. Of course, that's three teams formerly of the Pac-12 now involved with the Big Ten. So that's just something to remember. From there, it gets, you know, where it's a lot of twos and ones, right? Interestingly enough, that both teams from the Sun Belt that make the field both end up hosting. All interesting. All right, so let's go by and let's just kind of work through this here together. As you guys, you're kind of well aware of at this point, kind of, you know, who's who and that sort of stuff. But, you know, talk about the top eight national seeds and all that good stuff there. But here are the top 16 in order. Vandy is your one seed. I thought it would be Texas. And I think with Texas bowing out of the tournament early and Hoover and Vanderbilt winning it, that gave them the thumbs up. Arkansas, the three, kind of a quiet three, though. Nobody's really talking about Arkansas. And part of that's because they didn't make a run at Hoover. Everybody's talked so much about Texas kind of running away with this thing, and then Arkansas sweeps them. I don't know that people are giving Arkansas enough credit. Auburn, a team that leading into the week we didn't think would be a top eight national seed, but with so much attrition around the country in these tournaments, Auburn ends up being the number four national seed. North Carolina the five, LSU the six, and I think LSU is a little bit tipsy, to be honest with you. I think this LSU team will play really well at home, and of course they won't have to leave Alex Box Stadium unless they go to Omaha. I'm curious to see how well that travels, right? Georgia, we know about the Georgia offense, kind of a similar situation. Foley Field, very offensive park. The Bulldogs, a top eight national seed. Oregon State gets the last one at number eight. And then there's Florida State at nine. And this is where I think representation on the committee matters. I agree that Florida State should have hosted. I don't think Florida State should be a nine seed. They are tied with the lowest number of wins of the top 16 teams. They get the nine when they probably should have been 15 or 16, right? They ended up 38 and 14 this year. They did not reach the 40-win plateau. However, Mike Alford, former Bulldog, AD there, also on the committee, they're able to get the number nine. So that pairs up the Starkville, Mississippi State contingent down in Tallahassee with the Oregon State Regional. So should we win the Florida State, we'd play the winner of the Oregon State Regional. I suspect that'll be the Beavers. Then there's Ole Miss as your 10 seed. Came really from nowhere. And I remember talking to Mike Bianco a couple of weeks ago. He said, hey, we feel like we're in a good place. And I was thinking to myself, well, Mike, I don't know if that's the case. But they make a deep run into the SEC tournament. They get to Sunday. They go from having the weakest hosting resume of the 16 and 14 teams in the Southeastern Conference. And then they flip the script. Now, Tennessee, it ends up working out for them too. But Ole Miss passes those guys. Clemson, the 11, Oregon, the 12, Coastal Carolina, 13. Then there's Tennessee at 14. That's interesting. UCLA at the 15. I really didn't have much doubt about UCLA hosting. Some other people did. And then Southern Miss as the 16. That Southern Miss regional is loaded. We'll get to that here in a second here. But, again, could be a very, very impressive year for the Southeastern Conference. And the thing that I always say is you know, hey, if you don't want us to dance and stop playing the music, because we're going to be there. You know, we're going to be there as a league, whether you like it or not. If I can turn this down, I love these hidden ads. Let's see if we can't get that. I don't want anybody making money off me. All right, so let's see if we can't get this interactive bracket to pull up for us. That's the whole point of all of this. That's the point, guys. We can get this bracket to pull up for us. Without having to do so much, you know, interactive bracket. There we go. Okay. All right, so we'll start with the Vanderbilt Regional. They will get Wright State, and then there's Louisville and East Tennessee State. East Tennessee State, winners of their conference. Louisville and at-large. I think Louisville is capable of going in there and winning that thing, but I like Vandy to win it. Vandy at home with that Vandy pitching staff. Kind of an oddly contoured stadium, so it takes a little while to get used to that. Home field advantage should work for them. And Vanderbilt, I will be honest with you, beginning of the year, I did not believe in this Vanderbilt team. I still don't think they're capable of winning a national championship. But here they are as the number one seed in the tournament, which until last year had been a bit of a curse in the NCAA tournament. Of course, Tennessee, the first team since Miami in 1999. All right, they're the one seed. They will pair up with 16 seed Hattiesburg Regional. I think this thing is absolutely loaded. I don't know that people are giving Columbia enough credit. So I figure Southern Miss will save their ace for game two, which will be the winner of the Alabama-Miami game. And a lot of people were wondering if Miami would get in. They do. I think Alabama is very dangerous in this regional. It kind of helps because Alabama and Southern Miss have already played. But don't be shocked if you look up on Friday and Columbia is giving Southern Miss the blues a little bit. That Columbia team can swing it pretty well. That's something to kind of watch as we get into this thing. So I think Southern Miss is going to have a tough time getting out of this regional, just simply because of the fact when I think about Riley Quick throwing against Southern Miss in game two, if Southern Miss gets into the loser's bracket, I think it's going to be a very difficult proposition. Of course, the winner of this will head probably to Nashville for a super. But Southern Miss got to host, but they did not get a peach of a regional. We mentioned our group, of course, Mississippi State, Florida State. I think the key for State is you got to win the first two. You know, you simply have to and make somebody else get out there. And so what do? You probably throw Pico in game one. I know a lot of people think we should hold him for Florida State. You got to ensure you win the first game. Now, hey, if Charlie Foster wasn't coming off an injury, like if Charlie had been a regular for us down the stretch, I would throw him. I think you need a left-hander to kind of neutralize some of that run game stuff. But again, Bethune-Cookman gave Florida State a game earlier. Of course, that wasn't against a weekend starter. But this could be a fun one. I think it boils down to State or Florida State, probably who wins game two. Our regional, again, paired up with Corvallis, Oregon State will get St. Mary's, who is actually a really good four. And then TCU and Southern Cal. This is a very, very good regional. This could be very, very entertaining. And I think, you know, one of our astute posters on Gene's page says, one of the things that I love about our path to Omaha is that we will not have to encounter an SEC team until we get to Omaha, should we continue to win. The trip out west would never be fun, but as far as super regionals go, I mean, that Oregon State Stadium, Beaver Stadium, holds about 3,200. I think that's correct. But they're going to have to earn it. Oregon State, again, went out and did some great things in scheduling this year and kind of proved that you can do it if you really want to do it. But I think that's a very interesting little twosome there between the Tallahassee and the Corvallis Regional. And as noted, too, South Northeastern has won 27 games in a row. Let me remind you, in 2021, Virginia Commonwealth had won 22 in a row until they ran into Mississippi State. Let's see, Chapel Hill. I think this is an interesting one because Oklahoma has done some good things down the stretch and Nebraska is red hot. North Carolina should have no problem with Holy Cross. The Oklahoma-Nebraska thing, kind of going back to the old Big Eight, right? That could be a fun one. Kyson Witherspoon, I think you hold him for game two. That's what I would do. Maybe you guys see it differently. But I think Nebraska's red hot. Maybe you throw your number two and save Kyson. We'll see. But Kyson Witherspoon on the hill in Chapel Hill, that could be fun. That's paired up with the Oregon Regional, and I think this is one. I think Oregon should win this without a lot of trouble, even though Arizona got hot last week and went on to win the Big 12 tournament. Cal Poly is a team a lot of people thought was on the bubble. Well, they kind of took care of business themselves, and then Utah Valley gets into. This could be kind of a sneaky good regional. I mean, number one, you got a couple Power 5 teams in there, and especially Arizona with a lot of tradition, they expect to be there. You know, we play those guys down in Houston. They've got some guys that can swing it. But I think this one boils down between those two, Oregon and Arizona. And that's paired up with Chapel Hill. Interesting, right? All the way across the country for a super. Coastal Carolina, this is one where I'm going to pick somebody other than the host side. I don't think Coastal Carolina can beat Florida twice. And I think they would have to. East Carolina is in here. Interestingly enough, that you got a couple of guys on the committee whose teams will face off. Coastal gets Fairfield, and then the winner of Florida, East Carolina. I'm going to take Florida. I'm a college baseball nerd. I'm not a college baseball hipster. And I think East Carolina is a team that's capable of winning a game out of the loser's bracket. But I think Florida wins the first two games and then kind of wins that war of attrition down the stretch. They're paired up with the regional at Auburn. I think this is a good draw for Auburn. They get Central Connecticut State in game one, and then the winner of NC State and Stetson. And NC State, not one of their better teams, but, you know, Elliott and those guys always have a good team. This one could be a little bit of fun. I think it boils down to Auburn or NC State. I've got Auburn moving out of that regional. So I've got Auburn and Florida in the super. On the box side of the regional, we got Arkansas, the three. We'll get North Dakota State, and some people were forecasting them to come east. They did not. Everybody on this side of the bracket, on their side, are all Western teams. A lot of people, including myself, thought they'd just park Arkansas, Little Rock there. They didn't. But four teams west of the Mississippi, including Creighton, who won the Big East, and, of course, Kansas, an at-large bid out of the Big 12. Good year for those guys. And then North Dakota State gets the automatic qualifier. So three teams that won some ball games. I just don't know that Kansas or anybody else has enough pitching to beat the Razorbacks in Baum. I just don't see it. I got the Razorbacks advancing and probably setting up a rematch with Tennessee in Fayetteville. Tennessee will get Miami of Ohio in the opener, and then the winner of the Wake Forest-Cincinnati game. A lot of people thought Cincinnati should have made it in last year. I didn't agree. They make it this year. I agree. It makes good sense to me. Last year, not so much. Wake Forest, an interesting team, maybe have kind of been overshadowed a little bit within their own conference this year. I just don't think there's enough juice to unseat Tennessee at Lindsey Nelson. Now, this Tennessee team has some flaws. It does. But they're also the defending national champions. And so they're used to this. They're built for this. And, again, I've got them going to the Supers to take on Arkansas. The Clemson Regional, I think, is very, very, very intriguing. Very. Clemson gets USC Upstate. I don't know if USC Upstate's going to hit the home runs they normally do at home, but that's going to be interesting. And then you got Kentucky and West Virginia. That could be an absolute barn burner of a game right there. I won't be the least bit surprised if it's Kentucky and Clemson when it's all said and done, but I'm going to go with Clemson to win this regional. West Virginia, a team that got off to a very, very hot start and ultimately won the league, but in the regular season, but got the benefit of a rainout too against Oklahoma State. But all that understood, this is a team where I think there's three teams capable of winning a regional, but we're going to go with the host here with Clemson. That's paired up with LSU. And here's the thing. I don't think you really want to go to LSU. Not this time of year. Because it's going to be rocking. School's out. Doesn't matter. You're going to have a lot of people there all day long, cooking jambalaya, drinking beer. It can be a hostile environment. It truly can. They'll get Little Rock game one. Coach Chris Curry, former Diamond Dog, leading the charge there. Of course, they win the Ohio Valley. Dallas Baptist against Rhode Island. I've got DBU winning that game, and I just don't think DBU is going to have the offensive firepower to compete with LSU. They may be able to maybe win a game. There's no way they're beating LSU twice. So we'll have LSU and Clemson in a super at Alex Box. Georgia. Binghamton, of course, wins their league, sneaks in, surprises some people. But, man, for a top eight national seed to get two other Power Five teams in your regional is interesting. Duke and Oklahoma State both get in. Oklahoma State, a lot of people thought Josh Holliday was on his way out. They rally at the end of the year. Of course, he's been mentioned in connection with the Mississippi State job. Chris Pollard, the head coach at Duke, been mentioned in connection with the state job. And, of course, Wes Johnson, who's now signed an extension. So it's interesting to look at this, the dynamic of this one. Not a lot of teams out there have two Power 5 teams in their regional. Oregon State is one, obviously. North Carolina is another. But you know, Athens, I think you've got a couple teams here. If they can swing it a little bit, it can be an interesting weekend. It truly can be. But I like Georgia at home. They got just enough pitching, but that could be one of those wild regionals that it requires every game. They're paired up and will host the winner of the Oxford Regional. Ole Miss gets Murray State. They can swing it. Western Kentucky, a team that won their tournament. Georgia Tech won their league. And Georgia Tech clearly feels like they should have hosted. I think they have a bit of a beef. I think Southern Miss hosted over Georgia Tech when it was all said and done, and Georgia Tech winners of the ACC and Southern Miss didn't win the Sun Belt. I think you got a beef, and that will probably motivate them. But Ole Miss plays really well at home, unless you got to play early in the day, as Arkansas Little Rock can attest. But I like Ole Miss to get out of the regional and then face off with Georgia there in the Super. The final pairing we're going to talk about, UCLA will host Fresno State, and it's interesting, too. Again, this is another West Coast regional with all West teams. Interesting, right? UCLA hosts Fresno State, and UC Irvine against Arizona State. I understand there's going to be some changing on the staff at the Arizona State job, if that makes sense to you. But UC Irvine, this is a guy, obviously, Irvine got off to a great start. Anteaters have done been a good program, very solid mid-major. People love them. UCLA played really well down the stretch. Kind of an afterthought in the Big Ten. Probably shouldn't be. But this one's going to be a fun one. But I like UCLA and their pitching to win this thing. Not what they were 10 years ago, or certainly a dozen years ago, but still very good. They're paired up with the regional in Austin, the number two overall seed. Texas gets Houston Baptist, who won their league, and then there's Texas San Antonio, which didn't win their league and make it as an at-large against Kansas State. This one's going to be a fun one. And I honestly don't think Texas will sweep the regional. I do think Texas wins the regional. I don't think they sweep it. It's just one of those, call it a gut feeling. I think Texas San Antonio is good enough to maybe get one from Texas and force a regional final winner-take-all game. But I just don't know that they are going to have enough pitching when they get there. And Texas, obviously, coached by Jim Schlossnagel, in pretty good shape. So I got Texas and UCLA coming out of there. So for the most part, I think the chalk probably holds on the right side of the bracket. And I don't know so much that it does on the left side. Of course, there will be a handful of those. But I think you could see some 2 and 3 seeds on the left side of this bracket maybe end up winning a regional. I think that's important to understand. That's the fun part of it, right? It's just kind of working through all this stuff. And it's so interesting. Again, we talk about RPI is not everything. And it's not. But it worked out well for teams like Auburn. You have the number 3 RPI, number 1 strength of schedule. As I pointed out several times in the articles this past 10 days, if that doesn't get you a top 8 national seed, then the system is broken. The SEC is really that good. Not to mention, give Auburn some credit. They played a home-and-home with Georgia Tech that won the ACC. It's they could have went out and just scheduled South Alabama, North Alabama. They did, but not just those teams. They could have just stayed within their own area code and put together a non-conference schedule. But I think it says a little bit something about being willing to go on the road, play in one of these tournaments, and then also to play Georgia Tech home or away. And some good games played between Auburn and Georgia Tech. So again, RPI matters. But I think when you get a little bit deeper into this thing, like you look at Alabama, Alabama has a 13 RPI. And they don't host. Just behind them, Florida State, 14 RPI, won 3 less games. And 4 spots behind in the strength of schedule, they're hosting. UCLA, 15 in the RPI. They're hosting. You know, won four more games than Florida State, right? Oregon, 16 in the RPI, won 42 games. And then there's Florida, 138, and at 3 in the strength of schedule, they're not hosting. TCU, we talked about, would there be Big 12 push to get at least one host? You certainly could have made a case for TCU, but instead it's Southern Miss who is behind them. And to give Southern Miss a little bit of credit, they won 44 games and are one of the hottest teams in the country. However, TCU with a strength of schedule of 18, Southern Miss 67. Dallas Baptist was in the hosting conversation, won 40 games, didn't happen. Georgia Tech, as we just mentioned, 40 games, didn't host. And so, again, a lot of teams around there with Florida State, and again, that kind of goes back to my earlier point. How is Florida State the 9 seed? They didn't reach the 40-win plateau, and their RPI is 14. You know, again, I'm not going to sit here and mince words about all this stuff, but, you know, I think it's so difficult when you've got a team with 40 wins to ignore them unless you've got some – you know, some modifiers that work in your direction like you do for Auburn. It's like, yeah, you're 38 and 18, but number one SOS, number three RPI. To me, that's a no-brainer. And that was all the discussion last week. You know, SEC would get at least 4, at the most 5, and we end up getting 6. You know, so good news for the league, 6 top 8s, 8 host sites, and then 13 teams in the tournament. And so the bias against the SEC around the country is only going to grow. But I commend this committee. Last year, there were some egregious things that happened with that committee that made no sense whatsoever. And I was one of the first to jump out and say, this is stupid. I don't really have a beef with this bracket. And the fact that we're going to mince words a little bit about the last couple of regional host, that's going to happen every year. And so I think this committee showed some real integrity. I think a lot of things make sense to me. I think that's an important aspect of all of this. You know, for you and I, as John Q. fan of college baseball, you can look at this and say, you know what, I might have a case for this team, but I can see that, right? So there's some logic to all of this. You know, The Southeastern Conference, the top RPI conference all year long, dominated the top 25 all year long, dominated the top 10 in the RPI all year long. Well, we're not going to go grow the game. We're going to reward the best teams. And then one of the things that I heard leading into all of this is one of the agenda items for the committee was to pick the teams that had the best chance for success in the tournament. And I believe they've done that. I think the seeding makes sense. Of course, again, you can quibble a few things about, you know, Southern Miss. But again, let's be honest about that. If they had an RPI in the later teens with representation on the committee, they're going to get the host. And that was the thing that I said all the week last week is that, you know, I'd wondered if they were going to have the RPI climbing opportunities because they were 21 in the RPI. They end up gaining 2. By virtue of, you know, winning all the way to Sunday, they lose to Coastal, of course, who was a top 10 RPI, and that moves them into 19, which is in striking distance of hosting, right? And you know Alabama wasn't getting it, right? So that basically moves you up another spot. You know, TCU, you've got a better resume, I think. So, you know, Alabama and Florida weren't going to get a 9th spot, so you kind of pull those guys out, bring TCU out. Well, then, boom, there you go. So they're missing your top 16. So, again, it makes sense. Like, there's a logical train of thought with all of this, whereas last year there were some decisions that were made that made no sense whatsoever. And there are many of the people on last year's committee that are back this year. There are some others, and one person in particular I know that was the big grow the game advocate, not on the committee this year. And it's incredible when we don't have people that have an agenda about college baseball, how we can just go in there and pick the best teams. And I believe that's what this committee has done. And I don't know how many times in years past where I've sat here and really praised the committee, other than in 21, when so many of the national forecasters said Mississippi State would not be a top 8. I said they would be a top 8. Notre Dame would not be. And I think the committee then kind of navigated a very difficult situation with Notre Dame. You remember, they only played four or five non-conference games, and I think most of those were against Central Michigan, you know. And so they basically cancel all the non-conference and then save all their arms to play in the ACC weekends. Well, they win the ACC, and you think, hey, they should be hosting. Well, you know, if I didn't have to pitch in the midweek and I could save all of my arms for the weekend and you had to pitch the midweek, well, I have a competitive advantage. And I think that committee was very careful not to set a precedent about scheduling. You know, we talked about this year about how non-conference SOS matters if you're a Power Four team, and it should. Now, granted, you win the toughest league in the country, you should be rewarded. But if you're one of the toughest teams in the country and the toughest league in the country, you shouldn't go out there and just kind of schedule a bunch of wins for yourself. I understand you got to do some to get some young guys some work, but you got to be willing to go challenge yourself. And I think, again, to that point, I think you go look at what's happened with Oregon State, how they end up getting a top eight national seed with no power conference at all, no conference to call home, much less to build an RPI. Everything they did, they had to go schedule for themselves. And I think that should be rewarded. I think Notre Dame should have been penalized. I think Oregon State should have been rewarded. Now, I don't think Oregon State should have been rewarded at the expense of an SEC team like Auburn or LSU, and they weren't. And so, again, I think that shows that this credibility among this committee should be praised. I think what they did has a lot of logical thought to it, and it has a lot of integrity. And one of the things that I want to say, too, J.R. Teagues from southeastern Louisiana, they had RPI 54. He is the chairman of the committee, and his team didn't get in. His team, according to some, was the last team out. And so if you're Kentucky, I think you probably need to send a fruit basket to J.R. Teagues and the committee and say, you know what, hey, we appreciate the fact that you guys recognized that us playing in the Southeastern Conference with a strength of schedule of 8 and an RPI of 38, and not to mention, you know, when you, people forget this. You know, it's like you get so caught up over the season. So Kentucky has wins over Georgia, Auburn, Texas, Ole Miss. But one win there, right? Could have taken a series against any of those teams. They didn't. But you get two against Tennessee, who hosted. You get all three against Oklahoma, who's at North Carolina. And then you get one against Louisville. All those teams made the tournament. And basically, you're just a handful of wins away from, you know, taking series against three of the top eight national seeds. And so I think, again, I commend this committee for not just doing the easy thing and not just doing the buddy-buddy thing. And listen, there's always some maneuvering. Like, I was being told as late as yesterday that there were a lot of people in and around Hattiesburg that were saying, hey, we do not want Mississippi State in here. We do not want Mississippi State in here. Now, I've been told there wasn't a lot of pushback from the Southern Miss administration. But I am told that there were a lot of people that are connected to Southern Miss that were saying, hey, give us anybody. We don't want Mississippi State in here. And that's really a tribute to you rather than a criticism. And I think the truth of the matter is, too, after the experience we had down there in 17, many of you are probably not in a big hurry to get back down there for a regional because they made us jump through hoops to get tickets for our fans. And so all that understood, I'm excited the bracket is here. I'm excited the tournament is about to begin. And again, the bracket makes good sense. And that's all we ever really wanted, right? We want things to make sense. We knew we weren't going to host. And along those lines, I think every Bulldog, with rare exceptions, said, you know what? Ole Miss deserves to host. They did. They deserved to host. They came from back, middle of the pack, where the chips were down. Ole Miss stood up and went on and played for the SEC tournament title. And so even as much as you don't like them, you have to respect the effort and you have to be objective about that. Yes, they deserve to host. Now, you could make a case Southern Miss, but hey, look at all the games they won down the stretch. You know, they were probably the hottest team among their contemporaries. And I just wasn't sure if they would be willing to give the Sun Belt too. They did. And so when all things are said and done, we have a good bracket. Now it's about Mississippi State going and winning some ball games. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle without exception. If you're bringing a large group to town, don't overthink it. Don't go get four or five Airbnbs. It's that time in between the big moments that are the memorable moments, right? I mean, it's the time that you spend just kind of hanging out, kind of getting caught up on life that matters. It's so nice to be able to stay under one roof. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You'll be glad you did. You can peruse their Facebook page and see all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three baths, 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. Maybe you got some vacation time this year and you can't afford to take the big trip. Why don't you come to Starkville? Come spend some time with us. You know you love us and we love you. You love the great restaurants and all the amenities available to you in the greater town of Starkville. So come be a part of that. Now, when you Google, some booking options are going to pop up, Airbnb, VRBO. You can go that route if you choose to. But if you want to save some bucks, and I think you're all about that, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10, BSR10, the number 10, to get 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, you're saving money on the premium place to stay in the Golden Triangle. We stayed there for New Year's, had a blast. We plan to do it again. So nice to have everybody together. You know, because there's some conversations, you know, you can't have in front of everybody, right? Sometimes you just want to sit and play some games, and other times kind of retreat and get caught up with a sister or a brother, a cousin, a friend. Make those memories memorable for you at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Okay. Our friends at D1 Baseball, we have a lot of respect for them, and in no way am I being critical, but I wanted to go back and look at the preseason top 25 and see how they did, right? And it's so difficult to predict future human performance because there's so many variables that enter the equation. Injuries are a part of it. Some guys don't develop, and you know, they're just things that happen. So let's run it back here. The number one team in the country was Texas A&M. Fresh off a 53-15 season that saw them play for a national title, one win away, one swing away from winning a national title. They returned the bulk of that order and all of the weekend rotation, and they didn't make the tournament. Now, granted, they had some big injuries. Gavin Grahovic goes down early. You know, Sorrell was out for a while. Hayden Schott didn't have the year they were expecting him to have. And there just wasn't a lot of protection around Jace LaViolette. Of course, they get us in Hoover. But they're done playing baseball. And we do expect an announcement about the future of Michael Early very soon. Number two team in the preseason was Virginia. Didn't make the tournament. That's significant to a lot of our people because Brian O'Connor, of course, is a reported candidate for the Mississippi State coaching job. And people are thinking, well, Steve, he didn't make the tournament. Maybe we get him. And yeah. We're not going to make an announcement about any coaches until we're done playing baseball. And that's important to understand, okay? Let's not get the cart before the horse. Nothing is bigger than the M over S. And you don't want to go hire a coach and create a distraction for the team. And even if you do, you don't make a change there. LSU was preseason number three, so not too far off here. They finished last year non-ranked. People forget that. Like, I read some stuff earlier. People are like, well, LSU always gets to host. Well, they didn't last year and lost a regional and ended the year outside the top 25, preseason number three. You know, of course, they end up a top eight national, so I think we'll call that a thumbs up. Tennessee, preseason number four, they ended up being in the teens, but we still got some season to go, right? They entered a postseason as a host. So I would say maybe a little bit overranked, but you know, when you got the defending national champions coming back, you're going to get some benefit of the doubt. Arkansas 5. They almost pegged this one perfectly, almost. Arkansas, a team that finished 17 last year and has been a consensus top 10 team much of the year this year. North Carolina at 6, finished the year at 5, came in at 6. And what are they, the fifth national seed? They're top 8. Oregon State finished the year at 10, entered this year at 7. They're a top 8 national seed. Georgia finished the year at 11, preseason number 8. And what are they, the 7th seed? Top 8 national seed. Florida State 9, And it's ironic, they're the 9 seed, but I don't think they're the 9th best team in the country or the tournament. But again, D1 baseball very high on them early in the year, and they've kind of backed it up. Florida, preseason number 10. They finished number 8 last year. Of course, they had that dreadful year and kind of had a dreadful year the first 3 weeks of the SEC season. Came down here, winners of just one conference game and won 2 of 3 from us. In the hosting discussion, just didn't work out quite as well, but I would say that's a thumbs up. Duke, preseason number 11, finished the year 24. Maybe didn't live up to expectations, but they're a 2 seed. Oregon, 12, and again, almost perfect, right? Almost pegged this one perfectly. Oregon finished the year at 12, opens the year at 12, and then where are they? Again, right there in the hosting spot. NC State, 13, finished the year at 6, opened the year at 13. Maybe a little bit overrated early on, but a very solid team, and we'll see how they do in the regional. Wake Forest was 14. They were 9-ranked at the end of 24, preseason 14. Probably didn't live up to expectations, but here we are. Clemson finished 9, opened up at 15, and here we are, one of the top 10 teams in the country. Oklahoma State, this is one that didn't work out well for them. 21, closing out 24, opened up at 17, and then they had to kind of hustle down the stretch to make the field. Some people didn't have them in. And then there's your Bulldogs. Ended 24 at number 22, ranked 18th to open the year, and we thought that may be a tad low. We expected to open somewhere in the teens, and then, of course, dreadful start to the SEC season. So, we're not a top 25 team, but here we are still playing baseball and a chance to do some cool things. One that they were wrong about, too, and maybe they kind of erred on the side of caution here because you didn't know what to expect with Jim Schlossnagel on Texas. They were unranked at the end of 24. Preseason number 19 team in the country. And have gone to number 1 at times. And the number 2 national seed in the tournament. Dallas Baptist, it's interesting, this group finished unranked at 24, preseason number 20, and ends up with an RPI right around 2021. And they'll be the number 2 seed in the Baton Rouge Regional. Arizona finished last year at 25, opened up at 21, got off to a bad start to this year. You know, we played them down in Houston. They get it together late and win the Big 12 tournament. And again, a 2 seed in the regional. UC Santa Barbara, and this was a joke last year. And this is the problem that I have with some of the polling stuff. It's like we want to sell subscriptions to everybody. And I understand that the Gauchos hosted last year. They shouldn't have. They did. Ended up the year at 19. Preseason 22 this year. No, not a great year this year at all. I don't know if you guys have kept up with it at all. But UC Santa Barbara ends the year pretty mediocre when it's all said and done. 36-18. And lose 2 to end the year, including their one game in the Big West tournament. They lose to Hawaii in the play-in game. So no tournament for them. And again, some of that's just a benefit of playing out there in the West Coast Conference without a lot of competition. Number 23, and this one worked out pretty good too. They were unranked in 24. We're talking TCU. And they end up right there around 2021 in the RPI. And a team that's a pretty solid number 2. So pretty good call there. Nebraska, a team that maybe under-delivered early in the year but got it going late. They had Nebraska as a preseason 24, unranked in 24, but preseason 24. And they end up winning the Big Ten tournament. One of 4 teams. And then Troy, you remember all of the Hugh Bree. Everybody's like, I can't believe Troy's in and not Southern Miss. Well, Troy, for the most part, made D1 baseball look good until the very end. And Southern Miss eventually gets their revenge. Troy ends up out of the tournament. Southern Miss ends up hosting a regional tournament. And so I just wanted to kind of go back and look. There's just so much of that. There's just so much of that part of it that's it's intriguing to me. Is, you know, again, I think D1 baseball did a good job. They did a really good job. And there's always going to be a few hit or miss things. I don't think there's any questions about that. It always happens that way. And so let's be sure that 2 things that we remember, those guys are doing the best job they can. And it is very difficult to predict future human performance, but also, too, there's a reason we play the games. Yeah, at the beginning of the year, some people were like, hey, A&M will win this thing. They should. And I remember some people close to Mississippi State baseball and said, yeah, it's a lot of pressure, though, for a first-time coach. A lot of pressure, you know, for a guy that, hey, there's a lot of expectations. This team played for a national title last year. You returned everything. Really, all you can do is screw it up. Just kind of stay out of the way. And it proved to be more difficult than people expected. And now A&M doesn't make the tournament. And if memory serves me correct, I believe I read that Texas A&M is the first preseason number one team to not make the tournament. And then to add insult to injury, Missouri sets an SEC record with 37 losses, and all three of their wins came against you in your ballpark. So not only were you historically bad as a number one, the worst team in SEC history swept you at your place. That it makes it so difficult to keep a coach when that kind of thing's going on, right? I mean, you begin to think, hey, this team was built to win this year, and so you're going to lose so many pieces. You're going to lose Prager, Laviolette, Caden Kent. You're going to lose all those pieces, and so it's a rebuild next year. And so you begin to ask yourself, well, would we be better off with another coach kind of leading the charge here? And I think what you're going to find out in the next 24 to 36 hours is yes. Yes, that's the case. And so, interesting. And, again, there's some names we've already kind of identified with that. Not a lot of coaching stuff to add today. I'll just tell you that I've been told by a source very close to the Virginia administration that they expect that they're going to be able to hang on to Brian O'Connor. Now, they wasn't a definitive statement, but they said pretty confident. And so that's one of those things you look at and you begin to kind of ask yourself. But I think it's important that our folks understand this. Not all the known candidates are known, right? That there may be some candidates have been identified that maybe we're not talking about as much. I never rule out a hire out of left field. You know, Lamonis kind of came out of left field too. We hired him. And so we'll see how things go. And, of course, I think – and I love John Cohen to death, but I think John kind of painted himself in a corner. And when we hired Chris Lamonis, people were like, hey, you know, I don't know about this. It's not the best coach in college baseball. But Chris Lamonis came in here and did something that no other coach has ever done. And that's won a national championship. So we'll forever be grateful for that. But now we're moving forward. John's at Auburn. Lamonis will take a job somewhere else either this year or next year. And we move forward. But the focus right now is truly about Diamond Dogs, about going to Tallahassee and finding a way to win that regional. It's not going to be easy, but I think we got a pretty good draw when it's all said and done. And again, we'll talk more about the teams as we get there. And again, reminder, your weekend show will likely come late Friday night or Saturday morning, just depending on how things go, because it could be some wet weather that changes our schedule out there. So we'll get caught up with you as soon as we can. But on Wednesday, we'll preview Northeastern a lot more in-depth. You can get the full coverage over JeetsPage.com. If you're not subscribing, shame on you. I want you guys to be the most informed Mississippi State fans around the water cooler and on the golf course and everywhere you go. We're doing our best. And it has been an exhausting day, to be quite honest with you. I mean, it really has. I put so much effort into this, trying to forecast, trying to make sense of all this stuff, working sources. And there's so much information out there that I'm trying to get that people don't want us to have. Right. And so it makes it very difficult at times, but very happy with the result that we got. I'm happy we're not going out west, even though I think we probably could have gone to UCLA and won that regional. But we may still get a chance to travel west. You win this weekend, you've got an opportunity to go out to perhaps Oregon State for a super regional, because I do expect them to win that super. But people have asked, what happens if we win the regional and Oregon State doesn't? Well, in that case, if the two seed at Oregon State wins the regional, we would travel there. If it ends up being 2-3 seeds, and I don't expect that, but if it's 2-3 seeds, then the committee would make the decision. The committee at that point would then step in, because you don't seed everybody 1 through 64. Some people say, well, the higher 3 seed would host. There is no higher 3 seed. That's just not how that process works. And so the selection committee would then say, hey, well, here's where we are. Let's have the super here. That we went through that back in 18 when us and Vanderbilt both won a regional. And because Duty Noble was under construction, they elected to go to Vanderbilt to have the super regional. But the committee made that decision. It wasn't a situation where Vanderbilt was the higher 3. People try to sometimes add logic where there's not a process to really evaluate. It's just a matter of what the committee decides. So yeah, in order for us to host a super regional at Duty Noble, which I absolutely do not expect, what would have to happen down there is we would need USC or St. Mary's to win that regional at Oregon State. And then it becomes a matter of debate, right? And so you know, you go out there and you play well. And obviously, I think Mississippi State, if you found a way to knock off Florida State and Northeastern to win that regional, probably means a little bit more, maybe, in the eyes of committee. I don't know. But that's how it would work. And so the eye test matters. We need to go play well. And we need to say, we're willing to play anywhere. And what's so crazy is some of our Omaha trips have come on the heels of road regionals. Everybody wants to host, and I do too. Gives you a tremendous amount advantage. But we have made this work so many times in our history. And so we look forward to our fifth ever trip to Tallahassee, Florida. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.